This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is titled The 3-Year Affair. And joining me from Ontario, Canada, in North Bay, Ontario, which today is a cold day in Canada, is author Annie Omus. Thank you for joining me today.
It's great to be here.
This is a fascinating book of 144 pages. I say fascinating primarily because of the cover. The cover is certainly interesting, and some might call it provocative. You have a young lady with a beautiful tattoo and a wonderful color facing north. Share with my listeners the title, The 3-Year Affair. What was the motivation behind that, and how did you come to write it?
Well, actually, when I first started writing the book, I didn't really have any intentions of sharing it. I had a few of my close friends that are avid readers read it, and based on their suggestion, I decided to share it. I always kind of wrote for myself, and at the time, my post-traumatic stress disorder was in full swing, and it really helped me deal with a lot of those issues I was facing, and it helped me feel confident to make some serious changes in my life and be honest with myself and others. It forced me really to figure out what path I wanted to continue on with, and writing and publishing seemed to be it.
You mentioned PTSD. Was that military related, or was it something else?
It was something else.
Okay, won't ask you the details on that, but those are tough things to deal with. I think I have post-birth disorder, but I'm trying to work through that, and after about 80 years, I should be getting better at it. Your book should appeal to whom? Do you think this is a book that is, some people describe books like this as chick flicks or chicklets or other nomenclature. How would you describe the book?
The book itself should appeal to a large group of readers. I did do a focus group made up of people from all walks of life, men and women from ages of 15 all the way up to 87. And the one consistent thing that occurred through with the feedback was that it kept you reading from the beginning to end. And the description that was given to me was a female version of Sons of Anarchy, which I enjoyed. I think it's because it's not just a romance. It touches on a lot of different social issues, touches on bullying, spousal abuse, subcultural differences, and PTSD.
Fabulous. You have a variety of subject matter that you have approached in this. How long did it take you, Annie, to complete your work?
6 days.
6 days? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't mean to sound shocked, but I have some authors that take 15 or 20 years to get something out of their system. Did you begin by writing an outline, or how did you approach this? Or was it just what I would call inspirational or cathartic?
I'd written the intro to begin with, and I, from there, decided I wanted to write a book. And I kind of did an outline, but I focused on certain areas of the book that really were passionate to me, and then kind of sewed it all together. I didn't write from chapter 1 to chapter 15. I think chapter 1 was probably my last chapter.
Really? In writing this, is it going to be a really serious read for someone? Would you call it entertaining? Would you call it action-packed? How would you describe it?
It's not, it's been categorized as a romance thriller and mystery. Actually, the Kirkus review that I'd had, they had stated that it was a romance with often grisly novel. It's not just a romance novel. It seems to be in the beginning, but then it twists and turns. It becomes more about understanding yourself and a self journey.
Interesting. This book, then, would you call it entertaining? Will someone really find it a satisfying read?
Yes, that's the feedback I've been getting, for sure. It's romantic, it's sexy, it's a thriller, and it's engrossing.
Where is the setting? Where is the setting for the novel?
Mo- part of it takes place in Canada, Toronto and Northern Ontario, and then as well Winnipeg, Manitoba. But it also takes you on a journey to Africa, Malaysia, Asia, and Japan.
Incredible. And all this in 144 pages. You must be a very focused writer or author in order to accomplish that. Is there one scene that you think will stand out to the reader that will make this a memorable read that they'll never forget?
Well, I could share the intro with you. I may have to change a few words in it, though, so that we can air it.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I could feel his breath on my neck between kisses as my back hit the wall in the otherwise unoccupied men's room. The intense feeling of panic and desire ran through my body all at once. We have to stop. They're going to realize if we're gone too long, I said between breaths. No, they won't. We'll be quick, he says, trying to keep my attention on the task at hand. Holy crap, I whispered as I tried to fight the urge to open his belt buckle that my fingers somehow had found. His hands traveled down my body, grabbing and pulling me into the swirling tornado of passion that has found my center of being. We have to stop. Not here. Not here. I say this time with fortitude. He leans his head on my neck and tries to control his breathing, his body pressed tight against mine. I can feel his excitement as he tries to gather himself. I run my fingers up the back of his neck and through his thick, dark hair, trying to catch my breath as well. Okay, but this is far from over, he whispers in my ear. He leans down and kisses me. I try for a second one. He grins a seductive smile and pulls away, teasing me, making me want him more. Then after what feels like forever, he leans in for the final kiss of the session. I go weak under his control, and in that moment, I know I am screwed.
Well, that gets your attention. Your readership, is this an appealing book, do you think, for both male, female, and age? I guess there must be an age category that you feel might be appropriately enticed by this novel.
Yes, our main target audience right now are women between the ages of 25 and 50. That seems to be where our sales are landing. I'm hoping as well with the second book, which is going to be released February 14th of next year, The Guild, that we might pick up more of a male audience. The second one is a lot more violent and action-packed. It's got a lot of twists and turns and has been described as Quentin Tarantino-esque. So I'm hoping that we can pick up more of a male audience.
Is there a way that you would categorize your book, maybe, to describe it in a more profound or advanced way?
I think thriller and mystery romance is the best categories for it.
And what is your hope with this book? You mentioned you are doing a trilogy on this aspect of the novel. Is that also correct?
Yes. Like I said, The Guild will be released February 14th, and we're hoping to have the third and final chapter, Redemption, finished and out by Christmas of next year.
That's an ambitious task. You have been very successful in getting this completed in a short turnaround. Were there challenges in getting it to print?
Yeah, actually, the biggest one was the production itself. Not only am I the author, but I'm a part owner of the publishing company, Annealmus Publishing. It's been a huge learning curve. This industry is giant to jump into, and I don't assume the learning curve will ever change, which is kind of exciting. We're hoping to have open calls for manuscripts at the end of 2016 once this trilogy is out. And the best thing about it is I've had a chance to work with a lot of really amazing people. I have a formatter, Alana Healy in North Bay. I have a graphic artist and photographer, Brian Bujo from Brian Bujo Photography in North Bay. And he's responsible for the cover shoot and all of my, or the cover work and all of my PR pictures for our media campaign. We have a copy editor, William Larichelle in Toronto. And our very talented McLean tattoo artist, Caleb Atkinson from Dead City Studios. And that's the tattoo that you see on the back of the lady on the cover. And we also have a silent partner and our shrewd editor-in-chief, Natasha McDonald.
So that is a real tattoo. That is an actual tattoo on the model on the front.
Yes, it is.
Amazing. Well, mm-hmm. it certainly is identifiable if you ever see her at the beach topless. I mean, I...
Well, it plays into the book. The tattoo is actually in the book. It describes a portion of what's happening with her. So,
your main character in this book, what is their name, and are they carried through to the trilogy?
I'm sorry, can you say again?
The main character, the name of the main character, are they carried through to the next in the series?
Yes, the story continues.
Continues.
It just picks up where it leaves off. And the second edition of this book, which is available now for sale, has a sneak peek to the guild at the end.
Very good. Thank you for joining me today. The title of the book, again, is The Three-Year Affair. Annie Olmos has been my guest. Now, where do we get copies of your book, those that want to read this or at least get a copy of the cover?
Currently, it's available online. You can get it through Lulu.com, Amazon, Indigo, Barnes & Noble, Nook, Kindle, and iBooks. And we're working right now in discussions with Indigo.ca to try and get the books into Coles and Chapters in Canada.
Excellent. Well, best of luck on the books in the future. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story. And if you're doing a search online, the author's name again is Annie Olmos. That is spelled in a little unusual manner. Annie is spelled A-N-N-Y. Olmos is O-M-O-U-S. Do a search under that name, and you'll also find the other books when they're released. Thanks again.
Thank you. Have a good day.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, If He Had Not Come, it was written many years ago by Nan Weeks, and David Nicholson is republishing it through Westbow Press. Hello, David.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. David, why are you republishing this book? What impressed you so much?
Well, this goes back many years. While I was sitting in my adult Sunday school class with my wife, it was there that I heard Nan Weeks' story, If He Had Not Come, for the first time. And I must say that the story did captivate me from the start. I can remember driving home with my young family that very Sunday morning, thinking to myself, I'm going to read this story to my family this and every Christmas to come. And after nearly 30 years of sharing this simple, thought-provoking story with my family, I felt a compelling urge to resurrect and redesign this narrative for a new generation of children and their families.
David, who would you say this book appeals to and why?
Well, I'd say it not only appeals to children, but their parents, grandparents, and Sunday school teachers. This unimaginable notion that Jesus had not come to earth will surely generate some thought-provoking discussions, whether at the family kitchen table, before bedtime, in the car, or in the classroom. I'd like to add, If He Had Not Come is more than just a story. It's a means of bringing people together, families together, teachers and students together, to talk about the things that matter to the heart.
So that was a very special Christmas Eve when Bobby and his father had that devotional. Tell us about that and what was on Bobby's mind.
Well, it was Christmas Eve, and Bobby and his father were having a devotional time before Bobby turned in for the night. The scripture passage they read together included John chapter 15, verse 22, and the phrase Jesus said, "If I had not come." And this phrase stuck in Bobby's mind after he climbed into bed. And so is introduced the theme of the story, the unimaginable idea of a world without Jesus.
No doubt that life as we know it would be very different if Jesus Christ had never been born. So this book, certainly unlike a lot of different books on a similar topic, what would you say sets it apart?
There are two reasons here. First, I've not found another book for children that addresses the question posed in the title, "If He Had Not Come." In addition to the simple gospel message, the story's discussion, questions, and activities serve as a resource guide for parents, grandparents, and teachers. And this guide is meant to enrich the reading experience. Second, so much of Christmas today revolves around consumerism, Santa, and Rudolph. If He Had Not Come puts all that aside. The story emphasizes the true reason for Christmas season, the birth of our Savior and Lord, the greatest gift of all. And I love what one of the book reviewers said about this book. She said, "Over the years, I've collected some Christmas treasures, and I have collected some fluff books. If He Had Not Come is one of those fluff books. It is perfect for putting the focus back on the reason for the season."
When did the story take place?
Initially, the story took place in the 30s and 40s when first published in a city neighborhood.
And certainly, it is a, as you've already mentioned, very, very thought-provoking. Bobby, what words would best describe him?
Well, I'd describe him as a very sensitive boy, very thankful, a believer in Jesus, courageous, helpful, and a take-charge attitude.
What was the most challenging part about this book?
Well, I'd say the most challenging part was the publication process in general, especially the complications in dealing with all the different department personnel within the publishing company itself. I guess that would be the most challenging part.
But rewarding, certainly you've been rewarded for your efforts. Tell us why.
Oh, golly. Just placing a signed copy into the hands of my children and grandchildren on Christmas Day.
Anything else you'd like to share with us, David?
Well, I guess it's based on my own life. At times I think about what life would be like without Jesus, and I think about the realm of harrowing scenarios. But I always conclude, as Bobby did, with a prayer of praise and thanksgiving, thanking Him for coming into this world and certainly coming into my life.
What's the best way to get your book, If He Had Not Come, the republishing of Nan Weeks' book?
Oh, you can pick it up at any bookstore. They'll order it for you, or any online like Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's available pretty much anywhere. Just type in the keywords, If He Had Not Come.
Thank you, David, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by West Bulk Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the Living Room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Warren. Oh, Warren. And my author who joins me from the New York City area is Dr. Ofem Aja. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Pleasure to visit with you. Your background, you were originally born in Nigeria and have migrated to the United States in the medical profession. And this is not your first book, but your second. And you have focused on the life of a former president of the United States, Warren G. Harding. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Why did you become interested in his life story?
Well, I had previously read about Warren Harding's rating among historians as the worst president or one of the worst presidents in the history of the United States.
Wow.
And I remember when I went to a medical conference in San Francisco during one of the tourist guides took us past the Palace Hotel and showed us where Warren Harding died of a heart attack
mm-hmm.
in 1923. And then last year, in December of 2014, I was listening to the radio when they were discussing Harding's love letters to one of his girlfriends, who was his best friend's wife, Carrie Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
I read those letters, the lyrical letters, and I was very, very interested. And I began to put two and two together as to why Harding has received historically such a poor rating among historians. So, I did some more research into Harding's life, and it struck me that, you know, this is an important piece of U.S. history that most people don't know about.
Not too much is known about him.
I thought maybe it would be interesting to write a play about Harding.
I think it's fascinating because there were some concerns or some mysteries surrounding his death. It was reported that he died of a heart attack, but there were some other suspicions. Is that also correct?
Yes, there were a lot of suspicions, and most of the suspicions centered around his wife's behavior. His wife was the only one with him in the hotel room when he died, and his wife refused to grant permission for an autopsy or dead mask. And there were a lot of other behaviors, like her burning certain documents relating to Harding's estate, that made people even more suspicious that he probably had a hand in his death. There were also suspicions around the personal physician of Dr. Whose name was Charles Sawyer. And Sawyer was, by all accounts, a quack physician. And the way he died the year after Harding died, in the presence of Harding's wife, also increased the suspicion that she may have had a death in President Harding's, she may have had a hand in President Harding's death.
Is it your background as a medical professional that caused you to become curious about the details of Warren Harding's life and death?
Well, that is part of it also, because I think people jump to the conclusion, many historians have jumped to the conclusion that he died of a heart attack. Dr. Sawyer, at the time of his death, diagnosed food poisoning from eating Alaskan crabs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the jury is still out. No autopsy was performed, and perhaps too late for us to, you know the exact cause of Harding's death.
You did some deep research, and I understand, if I am reviewing your book correctly, that Warren Harding's body was exhumed later in time, and checked for poison residue, and there was none found. Is that also correct?
I am not sure of that. I know that the body of Zachary Taylor, who is another president, was exhumed and no poison was found, because there were also suspicions about that. But I didn't come across any time in history when Harding's body was exhumed and re-examined.
Well, it's possible that I've confused the facts. That happens a lot. I've interviewed about 1,400 authors, and sometimes the stories get mixed up. But you have also focused on his paramour, or his many attractions to other ladies besides his wife. That also was an integral part of his story, correct?
Yes. Actually, most of the play is about Harding's affair with Nan Britton. Nan Britton was Harding's best friend's daughter. She was about 22 years old when Harding, you know, started having an affair with her. She became, Harding impregnated her, and she bore a daughter, Anne Elizabeth, for Harding. Harding was supporting her and her daughter until he died. And there were a lot of issues surrounding, she was excoriated by Harding's supporters when she had the audacity to claim that Harding was her daughter's father. And she published a book in 1927, The President's Daughter, detailing her affair with Harding.
Interesting.
Still, Harding's family rejected the, Anne Elizabeth, but then in 2015, in August 2015, just about 3 months ago, DNA evidence proved conclusively that Harding was the father of Anne Elizabeth. So, but again, most of the play is about Harding's affair with Nan Britton.
It was Anna Elizabeth. You mentioned that DNA evidence was confirmation that former President Warren Harding was the father. Was Anna Elizabeth still living at that time?
No, the DNA the DNA testing was done on the children of Anne Elizabeth. Anne Elizabeth died in 2005, so her children and Harding family did DNA for the testing. So it wasn't done on Anne Elizabeth herself.
Yeah, I've noticed this is only a 66-page book, but there's a lot of research has gone into this. You mention another well-known public figure, Strom Thurmond, in your book. Share a little of that story.
Well, the truth is, I took a lot of liberty with history, facts and fiction in writing the play. This is a play, and I am the first to admit that there's a lot of fact and fiction that is mixed there for the entertainment of the general public.
Wonderful.
The reason I brought in Strom Thurmond is that Strom Thurmond had an affair with a black woman. As a matter of fact, at the time that he was claiming, or he was campaigning to keep black people out of the bedrooms of white people, but he was sleeping with a black woman. That was about the same time that Warren Harding was having the affair with Nan Britton. So the assumption here is that Harding was consulting Strom Thurmond for advice, although that part of it is fictional.
It is fictional. All right. The play itself, have you had an opportunity to have it performed anywhere yet?
Not yet. It hasn't been performed yet. It was published in August, at the end of August. I have not had the opportunity to have it performed yet. The publisher is looking into that.
What did you find to be the most engaging story in the subplot of what you discovered about Warren G. Harding?
It wasn't just one. One of the most engaging subplots is how Harding emerged as president, how he emerged as a candidate of the Republican Party in 1920. They had a broker convention that ended in a stalemate, and Harding was put forward as a candidate who was not threatening to anyone. He looked presidential, very handsome. Women loved him. And and the Ohio delegation was very powerful. So he became the compromise candidate who was not even properly vetted. So, and now we have, there is a possibility that something like that may happen again in the future, especially if we have a brokered convention and a compromise candidate is put forward and the delegates don't have enough time to vet the candidate. So that was one of them. The other subplot was the fact that having achieved a lot, despite his flaws, he really, his government achieved a lot during the 28 months he was in office. So there was, and of course, there was, Harding had total disregard for the law while he was president. It was a time of prohibition, and he was serving alcohol, wines, in the White House that was seized, confiscated from bootleggers and other, you know, he had total disregard for the law.
This is also an interesting and cautionary tale about the danger of personality elections based on either looks or some other procedure, and that certainly is what's happening in our current culture, that people are attracted to people who are high profile and may have a certain look or certain style. Dr. Ja, what do you think is the most important underlying lesson or maybe historical theme that you would want to convey to the listener or the reader in your play, Warren O'Warren?
I think the most important lesson is that when we choose people who are not properly vetted, when we rely on looks and the high-profile nature of certain individuals, we may be causing trouble for ourselves. And we should look at the substance that people are made of and maybe what they have achieved and their antecedents in order to select the best candidate for high office.
That's good advice, absolutely. This is interesting that you have chosen to write about Warren G. Harding. The title of the book, again, is Warren, Oh Warren, my author, Dr. Offham Ajha from the New York City area. You have written another book. Is it also in a play or a dramatic series format, or what was its style?
This is my first book was a fictional novel, and the title is Dream Comes True, and it was published in 1997. It's available on Amazon. That was about a fictional physician who dreamt of running away with his nurse, and he eventually eloped with her.
Mm-hmm. Very good. The book, Warren O'Warren, how can they get a copy of that? How can my listeners find this book?
It's available on Amazon.com. It's available on Lulu.com. They can go to my website, www.offhamajha.com. It should be available at any of these sites.
Wonderful. Let me spell for my listeners your name. Offham is O-F-E-M, first name, and last name Ajha, A-J-A-H. And you are a medical doctor, so thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to become an author and to do the research that many of us may need to know about. Thank you again for sharing your story about the book you have penned, Warren O'Warren. Thank you for joining me today, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity you've given me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.